You're listening to MLB.com Extras, brought to you by MLB.tv. It's baseball everywhere.
Hey everyone, welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Datt, and today we are talking Nats baseball with our MLB.com reporter, Jamal Collier. Jamal, welcome back from vacation, and you come back to the news of the Nats and Howie Kendrick agreeing to a two-year deal. He was part of this team last year. What does a full season of Howie Kendrick mean for the Nationals?
Yeah, I mean, it could mean a lot. You know, first off, Howie Kendrick was really valuable for them in that couple of months when they had him since July. He was the guy who would come off the bench. He was their number one kind of right-handed pitch-hitting option. But he also is a guy who fills a lot of multiple roles. He can play some second base, especially if you have Daniel Murphy. You're not sure about his health status coming off the knee surgery in the offseason. You know, you feel really good about Howie Kendrick. He has to play every day to start the year to fill in for Daniel Murphy. You know, Kendrick's another guy you can put into the outfield, play left, take one of the corner outfield spots. So you have a guy who has some versatility with that. We know a guy like Dave Martinez is you know, we don't know exactly who his managerial style is going to be, but if he is kind of like Joe Maddon, those guys like to change things up and rotate players in and out and kind of give guys a rest. And Kendrick, you know, gives them that some versatility to be able to come off the bench, to get some at-bats and to start, you know, multiple games if he needs to, but also the guy who can be a huge weapon off the bench. So it's a pretty big signing for the Nationals to bring Howie Kendrick back. And now here we are a month out from camp, and they've kind of got their bench already set.
We've been talking to a lot of writers of NL East teams about what their rotation is going to look like for 2018. And it's really interesting how a lot of teams, you know, it's not the strength and they have a lot of work to do and they're still looking via free agency and potentially a trade as well. Not the Nationals. Their rotation is pretty much set. I know maybe their fifth guy is a little bit in question, but in terms of the top of the rotation, or at least one through four, with Scherzer, Strasburg, Gio, and Tanner Roark, everything seems set. What can we expect, though, from this one through four crew? I mean, can Max Scherzer win the Cy Young every year? No, but what can we expect from him in 2018?
Yeah, I mean, it's really been their strength, you know, dating back really to when this kind of successful run started in 2012. The Nats rotation, I believe, has never finished any lower than seventh in ERA in across baseball. So it's really just kind of been the backbone of this team, and it should be no different this next year. You obviously talk about the two guys, the top two of the top three Cy Young finishers in Scherzer and Strasburg. You joke to say that Max can't win it every year, but so far it kind of seemed like he's on that pace. That every year he's either going to win it or be in contention for it. And really, he's a guy who's so motivated to get better and continue perfecting his craft that I don't think we have any reason to believe that he's due for any kind of drastic drop-off. You know, as far as he stays healthy, you should see another season where Max is going to be right up there with the top pitchers in the National League. We saw what Strasburg can do. If he can keep himself healthy and if he can make somewhere around 30 starts, if he can kind of maintain his innings and stuff, and you see just how kind of dominant and good he was at the end of the season. Gio Gonzalez obviously had a really good year. Maybe he can't repeat those exact numbers, but he's proven himself to be a pretty reliable starter. Tanner Roark, he figures to for a little bit of a bounce back after somewhat of a down year last year. I think just really those one through four is going to be as good as anybody, especially in the division and probably in the National League as well. The question marks come at the fifth spot. Not entirely sure how they're going to go about that. They re-signed Edwin Jackson to a minor league deal. He'll have a chance to compete for that spot in spring training. I expect them to probably bring some more veterans in, kind of like that, just to have a chance to go in there and try to push and see if they can earn a spot and see what those guys have left. We combine them with the young pitchers they have, AJ Cole, who we've talked about before. He's performing well kind of at the end of last season. And Derek Fetty is their top pitching prospect. I think when you put those guys together, that's kind of see just exactly what they have. And they know, you know, so rarely do you get through a season with just five starters. Most time you need 6, 7, 8, 9, 10. And they really want to build some starting pitching depth. I think that's the biggest thing over the next month or so, to watch them try to see how they go about building that depth and see what kind of pitchers they can bring in to make sure if they do have injuries to those top four or even the fifth spot that they are kind of set there to make sure pitching is a strength for them.
All right, so they still have some question marks for that fifth guy in their rotation. But in terms of one through four, what would you say is a question mark of those guys, Scherzer, Strasburg, Gonzalez, and Roark?
You know, health is always a question mark, I guess, with pitchers. Strasburg probably is the biggest one there. I think, you know, if anything, exactly what you're going to get out of, I guess, you know, Gio obviously had a really good year last year, and there were some numbers that could have said that those numbers weren't as may have been a little fluky. Just kind of the good ERA he had. There was some numbers that kind of backed him up and said that Gio was, pretty legit last year. I think just exactly where he falls on that spectrum is going to be pretty interesting to watch. I think, you know, with Tanner Roark as well as a guy who is kind of fluctuating, seems to have a good year and then a bad year and a good year and a bad year. And I think him coming in with a full off season without the World Baseball Classic or without anything to kind of throw off his normal routine, he should be, you know, primed for a good year as well. I think that just the kind of variance there that you're not entirely sure. I mean, those guys have been their number two starter in the playoffs, you know, the last couple of years, Tanner a couple of years ago, Gio last year. But at the same time, you know, Tanner didn't pitch in the playoff series, you know, NLDS this past year after being the number two starter of the year before. So I think that, you know, again, it's just there's kind of some unknown with those guys. But, you know, if healthy, they should still be pretty solid and be a pretty strong rotation.
All right, let's talk about the number three overall prospect in baseball, according to MLB Pipeline. Victor Robles, he's a guy that's gotten his fan base so excited, and I know the team's excited about him as well. What can we expect from him this season?
Yeah, the interesting thing about Robles is, one, they've been very clear that he's going to play every day. You know, he's a guy who obviously last year kind of forced their hand he was not expected to be in the majors last year, and he played so well and performed so well in the minors that they called him up for September, and they thought it was going to be a one-month thing, and he'd go off to the Arizona Fall League, and once again, he performed so well in place that they put him on a postseason roster. So at this point, you say he's going to play every day, then that outfield is pretty much set in Washington next year. But, you know, as far as it looks right now, he's probably going to start the season in the minors. But once he's shown that he can go out there, and once he starts kind of showing off his skills and showing just kind of the arsenal of talent that he really has, that, you know, he can kind of force their hand a little bit. And, you know, he'll probably start the year, like I said, in AAA Syracuse. He hasn't even had a game in AAA Syracuse yet in his career. But if he continues to play well, you're going to see him as the outfielder of the future at some point in D.C. You know, how soon that comes is going to be particularly up to him and just how well he plays. But it also kind of be on a guy. Michael Taylor is probably the only outfielder who doesn't have his spot all the way secure. You figure Bryce Harper's obviously not going anywhere. Adam Beaton's got his spot pretty secure. But barring injury, I think the thing to look out for when Robles officially arrives in Washington is going to be kind of just one of how he plays and how Michael Taylor also performs. It's going to be a big key for him. But I think that you know, like I said, Robles is sooner or later going to be the outfielder of the future in D.C. It's just kind of a matter of when and how quickly that comes.
All right, Nats fans will definitely be looking forward to that. That's going to do it for us here on MLB.com Extras Nationals Edition. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, so make sure you stay tuned. Thanks, Jamal. Appreciate you joining us. Hello, everyone. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. Today we are talking Mets baseball, and we bring in our Mets reporter for MLB.com, Anthony DiComo. Welcome back from vacation, Anthony, and very nice for you to return because the Mets answer their first base need, signing free agent Adrian Gonzalez, at least we think. Obviously, he missed a lot of 2017 because of that back injury, but when he is on the field, he's productive. How big of a concern, though, is his injury history, at least last season, going forward?
Yeah, it's definitely a concern, and I wouldn't stop there. I'd say it's a concern when you have a guy who's going to be entering his age 36 season who wasn't all that productive even when he was healthy last year. You know, the notion that he's just going to come back on and be the player that he was in his 20s is probably not true. Now, the Mets don't necessarily need him to be that guy. They just need him to be a stopgap, a guy who can give Dominic Smith a little more time to develop, who can take pressure off of Dominic Smith, who no longer has to be the guy right away coming out of spring training. Now, of course, there is a chance that Adrian Gonzalez gives the Mets no value whatsoever, that his career is essentially over, that he's not going to be productive. But the beauty of this move is that it costs them essentially nothing, if that's the case. While he's making over $22 million next year, the Mets are only going to pick up about $500,000 of that. The Braves and the Dodgers will pay the rest. So it's a very low-risk move. It's a move that could potentially pay dividends if Adrian Gonzalez still has something left in the tank. And if he doesn't, so be it.
What does this mean for Dominic Smith?
Well, there's a good chance it means he's going to start the season in AAA. If Adrian Gonzalez is going to wind up playing more often than not at first base, you know, the Mets aren't going to want Dominic Smith to essentially sit on the bench 4, 5, 6 days a week. So, yeah, there's definitely a chance they will say to him at the end of spring training, Dominic, go back down to Las Vegas, rake for a while, hit a bunch of home runs, and we'll see you sooner rather than later. A small chance they could both make the roster. And there's a chance that, look, Dominic Smith can come to spring training and really just go gangbusters and win the job outright and say, I'm ready, I'm the first baseman, not of the future, but of the present. But the most likely scenario, looking at it right now, looking at what the Mets have done this offseason, is that Adrian Gonzalez will be the first baseman, and Dominic Smith, for a little while, will go back to the minors.
Jay Bruce was reintroduced to the New York media just a few short hours ago. What do you believe the team ceiling is with the addition of Jay Bruce and Adrian Gonzalez?
Yeah, well, look, the lineup wasn't really the issue for the Mets last year. It was the pitching, it was the rotation, it was injuries. But by and large, the lineup was productive, and Jay Bruce was a big part of that. Hit 29 home runs before he left for Cleveland, and the Mets are very optimistic that over the next 3 years he can give them that sort of consistency. This is a guy who plays in over 150 games a year. He's averaged almost 30 home runs a year throughout his career. The Mets value his skill set very much. They think he's a better defender in right field than people give him credit for. They don't mind that he carries some low batting averages with him. They love the power that he provides. So that's a nice bat to have in the middle of the lineup. And if you have a healthy Yoenis Cespedes in there, the Mets are still looking to acquire a second baseman to help out. And you look at all the other pieces. Michael Conforto is going to be coming back at some point, probably around May 1st. You've got Travis d'Arnaud in there. And go down the line. It's not a bad lineup. And it certainly wasn't the primary issue for this Mets team last year. So they're optimistic that this group can again be productive, that this can be a group capable of hitting a lot of home runs, putting a lot of runs on the board. And then it comes down to the pitching. Can the pitching stay healthy enough to turn that into wins?
We're going to talk about the pitching in just a second, but the other news that we learned about the Mets this week is that they were in talks to acquire Andrew McCutchen before he was sent out to the Bay Area to join the San Francisco Giants. And one of the sticking points for Sandy Alderson was that he didn't want to lose Brandon Nimmo. Now, how much of that is because of Brandon Nimmo's success so far, or how much Sandy sees, you know, how much potential he sees in him in the future, and how much is it that he just didn't feel Kutch was worth it?
I think it's a little of both. I think Brandon Nimmo is a player that the Mets are optimistic about, that the Mets have been optimistic about for some time. This is a guy who has really stood out in terms of his plate discipline. He was walking all the time down the stretch last year, and you know, hitting with a bit of power, hitting with a bit of authority when he did swing the bat. So he's a player that does a lot of things well, and I think last year coming up, logging some pretty significant playing time down the stretch, he opened some eyes about what he can be. And yeah, so the Mets are certainly high on him and do not want to just give him away, but they would give him away for the right piece. And I think there certainly was a bit of that in there, that is Andrew McCutchen the right piece? Probably not. This is a guy who's been a little inconsistent despite his, you know, super stardom. He has been a little consistent the past couple of years, and you know, a guy with not a lot of team control left. So you look at all those factors, and do you want to give up the next 6 years of Brandon Nimmo for that? The Mets decided no, it wasn't worth it. Now, if a similar deal comes down the pipe here for Josh Harrison, for example, a guy who fits their positional needs better because he can play second base, a guy who still has 3 years of team control as opposed to one, can that entice the Mets to get rid of Brandon Nimmo? Certainly, I think you have to look at it at that point. Brandon Nimmo, while he's a player that the Mets like a lot, is far from untouchable.
Yeah, and we have heard that Josh Harrison says he wants out after the Pirates continue their fire sale this offseason, getting rid of both Andrew McCutchen and Gerrit Cole. All right, let's talk a little bit about this Mets starting rotation. We know the club is making on the health of these starting pitchers in order to be successful. You've got Syndergaard, DeGrom, Harvey, Matz, Wheeler. How do you believe this rotation shakes out for opening day?
I think it's going to be a fascinating spring training, Alexa, because you've got essentially Jacob deGrom and Noah Syndergaard are the two guys that you don't question. They are the one and two in this rotation in some order, and the Mets fully expect both of them to be healthy. Beyond that, when Mickey Callaway was asked at the winter meetings who's guaranteed jobs, he essentially said no one. And that doesn't mean that that's exactly how it's going to shake out. Matt Harvey is probably the number three here, and I think there is quite a bit of optimism that he can come in and if not be the Matt Harvey of old, certainly give the Mets some sort of production in the middle of the rotation. But then beyond that, there's a lot of question. And I think it's going to be a very open competition in spring training. You have Steven Matz, you have Zach Wheeler, both of them with major, major injury concerns the past couple of years. You have Robert Gsellman, who really, you know, people had a lot of optimism coming into last season, what he could do, and he fell flat a little bit. Can he bounce back? You've got Seth Lugo, who has looked dynamic at times, has had troubles late in games, but can still very much be a valuable piece. Does he fit into the rotation? Does he fit into the bullpen? You've got Rafael Montero, who even showed the Mets a little something. So there is some depth here. I think there's certainly going to be a competition here. I think in a perfect world, you know, the Mets would love to have that rotation that they've long envisioned, which is DeGrom, Syndergaard, Harvey, Mats, and Wheeler. It might not ultimately shake out that way. And let's be honest, there's no chance that all five of those starters stay healthy throughout the season. But there's still a lot of talent here. And if three of them do, if three of them can give you those kind of 180 to 200 inning seasons that you really need, and if one of them, whether it's DeGrom or Syndergaard or maybe someone surprises and has that Cy Young caliber season that these guys are capable of, then you've got still a very good rotation and a force to be reckoned with.
All right, let's assume all these guys do stay healthy. Where do you think this rotation ranks in baseball right now?
Gosh, I you know, it's such a hard question to answer, because if you say, okay, they're all healthy, Syndergaard's healthy and DeGrom's healthy and Matt Harvey's healthy and these guys are all in their primes and pitching how we've seen them pitch at their best, yeah, it's one of the best, if not the best rotation in baseball. But it's just not a realistic thing. You know, even if these guys did not have these lengthy injury histories, nobody goes through a season using just five starters, and especially now with this Mets team, with injury concerns, with Zach Wheeler, who has never really been healthy, with Steven Matz, who has never really been healthy, it's not going to happen. So you almost have to factor in the fact that you're going to have injuries happen. You're going to have probably one of those five guys at minimum miss significant time over the course of the season. So you have to be realistic. And realistically, this is a rotation that has potentially two horses in Jacob deGrom and Noah Syndergaard. And if those guys are both healthy, then this is going to be one of the best rotations in the league. If one of those guys misses significant time, like happened last year with Syndergaard, then they probably don't have enough depth to make up for it. And you're looking at a league average or worse rotation. Everything in my mind rides on those two guys at the top, Syndergaard and DeGrom.
All right. Exciting to see how this all plays out during spring training. Anthony, like you said, that's going to do it for us here on MLB.com Extras Mets Edition. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, so stay tuned. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us. Appreciate it.
You got it.
Hey, everyone. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Datt, and today we're talking Marlins baseball. We bring in our Marlins reporter for MLB.com, Joe Fusaro. Joe, you wrote recently that the Andrew McCutchen trade from the Pirates to the Giants has a ripple effect on the possible moves for Christian Yelich and JT Realmuto. How so?
Anytime there's a change in the market, it kind of reshapes the market. And, you know, obviously, the Giants address an outfield need. I guess they're still looking for more outfield help. But the likelihood of the Giants being interested in Yelich obviously would decline because of the prospects it would take to get him. And obviously, they just move prospects to get Andrew McCutchen. So, to me, it almost kind of makes the Pirates interesting and wonder if they could potentially be in play. Because with the Gerrit Cole and the McCutchen deals, they kind of strengthened their farm system. Their team, just listening to Neil Honeycutt, talking about is their redirect. And, I think he would say they don't ideally want to take it all the way down, hope to be as competitive as possible. And Yelich making $7 million in 18 and $43, $44 million left through 2021. Very affordable player. So, it just kind of reshapes the market. And, obviously with some of the comments being made about Yelich wanting to leave, I'm sure talks will pick up. But I can tell you this, they kind of had simmered for a while. There hasn't been any type of urgency on the talks for Yelich, except for more than about 15 teams have checked in over the course of the offseason on his availability. But the asking price is extremely high.
All right, we saw a deadline pass on Friday. We have three Marlins who are unsigned for 2018, JT Realmuto, Dan Straley, and Justin Bour, not coming to terms with the club. Looks like they could be headed for arbitration. What's the latest here?
Yeah, Friday was the deadline to exchange salaries, and the Marlins have a longstanding policy. They had it with Jeffrey Loria, and it's continuing with the Bruce Sherman, Derek Jeter. They're a, island trial team since no agreements were reached. They're going to have those guys' salaries determined in by an arbitration panel. Now, all three are in arbitration for the first time. All three are core players, so they will be Marlins, assuming they're not traded. But it just determines their salaries for this year. The fact that they're $600,000 apart on Real Muto, I think he filed at $3.5 million, and the club counted at $2.9 million. It's not an ideal situation. You know, obviously, teams try to avoid this because those hearings are pretty uncomfortable because, you know, they're told both sides are saying, you know, not the nicest things to each other. And so, you know, the team, barring, you know, any type of change in policy, which I don't see, I think that's going to be determined at a hearing, but that will be done before spring training starts, and then we'll see where it goes from there.
With the Miguel Rojas and Derek Dietrich agreeing on their one-year contracts, what do you expect from them this season?
Yeah, both will have interesting roles. You know, I thought going into the offseason, the Marlins would more heavily look in the shortstop situation because it's a bit unsettled. JT Riddle is a talented left-handed hitter who was a rookie last year, but he had shoulder surgery. And Miguel Rojas, who played shortstop a good bit, he had thumb surgery, although he finished the year healthy. But Rojas has dealt with left shoulder injury as well, issues as well. So you had two guys that missed substantial time. But as of now, it looks like you're looking at Riddle and Rojas, you know, fighting it out in probably a platoon-type situation. I would anticipate if healthy, Riddle would be the guy with Rojas being a right-handed option. But Rojas is real valuable because he can play third base, which we don't know if Prado is fully healthy or Brian Anderson, who was called up in September, is really ready to be the everyday guy. So Rojas is valuable there. He also plays second base. And if Castro gets moved, Rojas could be there. And Dietrich's in a similar situation. Utility guy, left-handed batter with some power. He can also play a corner outfield, preferably left. But he's more of third base, second base, a little bit of first base, and left field. So two valuable bench players who could see substantial time. They got done, which that's always encouraging.
All right, let's talk about this Marlins starting rotation. If the season started today, how do you believe it would unfold 1 through 5?
Well, I'm going to take the stance that Sandy Alcantara, the number one prospect acquired in the Marcelo Zuna trade, he's just 22 years old. He got 8 innings of relief at the big league level last year, making the leap from Double A. I'm going to take the assumption he's not going to be ready. I'm going to take the assumption the team is going to say, Andy, even though this guy could profile as their ace, stay in Triple A, especially in April where weather isn't great in the north, and you know, just kind of, you know, get those innings. So I'm going to take it with Dan Straley, you know, fronting the rotation, with Jose Urania. Now, based on last year's numbers, Urania led the team in wins. He's got more electric stuff, but I would anticipate Straley being the proven veteran, kind of that stabilizing guy. You kind of know what you get. I think he will be the opening day starter. I think he will get that nod. I think Straley is going to have a lot to play for this year and pitch for because, he's first-year arbitration. You know, his name's a possibility to be moved at some point if this team, you know, feels they could, you know, at the trade deadline, there's a contending team that needs starting pitching help. If Straley's performing at a high level, which I anticipate he will do everything in his power to do, you know, he's going to be a valued guy in the first half of the year to help mentor some of these young guys and be a possible trade piece at the mid-season point. Then I'm going to follow up with Urania, who basically has been the most untouchable Marlin this offseason. You know, they pretty much have listened to everybody, on everybody. They obviously traded Stanton, Ozuna, and Gordon, and more to come possibly. But Urania, not being in arbitration yet, having upside. Now he probably profiles more back of the rotation than front. But, you know, this guy has done everything right. He made a lot of strides last year, and he's, you know, safely on the team. And I would kind of slot him number two. And then number three is going to be kind of a question mark. You know, is Adam Connolly ready to step up? He had a very strong 2016 before, you know, breaking his finger in August, and he, you know, his stuff and his velocity really dipped last year. You know, I think they're going to hope for a bounce back, you know, to see if he could do a little bit more. Caleb Smith, who they got in a trade with the Yankees, he's a left-hander. He's going to have a chance to fight for a rotation spot. You know, so you're going to have some interesting pieces there, you know, competing to round out the rotation, and you can have a number of these young guys who just got brought in that are also going to be in the mix. I think a guy to keep an eye on is a is a Trevor Richards, who's a guy who's, I think he's like pipeline, I think has 23 or 24 now in their latest list. He was born a top 15. He was a double A last year. He had a chance to kind of be a September call up. You know, I thought he was going to get called up, but, you know, he didn't. He's going to compete. And another wild card in the mix is Dylan Peters, who, if on point and his fastball command is there, Dylan Peters was a September call-up. I could see him being in a rotation, but he, like Alcantara, if he's not showing everything right, I think he could start off at AAA because he's pretty valuable. So it's going to be interesting, Alexa, because their rotation that opens the season may be completely different. The guys they really think could be fronting this rotation, not just for 18, but 19 and beyond, could be opening up at AAA, AA, and they're going to be as fascinating to follow the first couple of months as the guys that are actually in the big leagues. But Peters is a guy I think many are assuming will be in the rotation. I'm kind of hedging only for the fact that he lacked fastball command when he was called up in September. He didn't throw a ton of innings. Real value guy, low to mid-90s fastball from the left side with a real plus curveball. Real good pitchability, and he's a pretty valuable guy that I think they're going to want to make sure he is all right and ready to go. So that's why I'm not automatically having him in the rotation to start the year, but certainly he will be in the rotation, I would anticipate, you know, shortly after. It could be weeks or a month or two.
Of these pitchers that we saw last season, who do you believe needs to make the biggest stride for 2018?
Well, Peters is an obvious one, but I'll say Connelly, because, you know, he's got a lot to prove. You know, he is a guy that who potentially is going to be pitching for his career. He's a guy that has to really step up. Again, the velocity was down, the stuff kind of regressed. And I'll throw another guy in there. I'll throw Justin Nicolino. You know, here's a guy that's not overpowering, but, you know, they're going to try to figure out what he is. Is he a starter? Is he more of a left-handed reliever? He's kind of at a crossroads. He's kind of coming out of options. So, you know, that's a guy that's going to have a lot to prove. Wei-Yin Chen, who I didn't mention, and the reason I didn't mention him, is injury. You know, this guy only made like 32, 33 appearances in 2 years with the Marlins, been dealing with this left elbow, and last year he was shut down. So I can't automatically, you know, definitively say Wei-Yin Chen will be in their opening day rotation, but clearly a guy making a lot of money and a guy who has a lot to prove, but until he proves health, I kind of put him in the back burner.
Marlins fans have heard a lot about Sandy Alcantara. When can they expect him to be part of this rotation?
Yeah, I mean, the team will tell you that they'll break camp with the best five, and if Sandy's ready, he's ready. And that's all well and good, but when you're in the situation the Marlins are in, when you're doing this, you know, redirect, reset, and there's really no rush on, especially at service time on these guys. And again, I've seen too many players and young pitchers, because this isn't the first time I've seen the Marlins kind of go with young pitching. And I just know how the weather is in April. You know, I know you go up to Washington. I think last year we went to Washington. I think Dan Straley's first start, I think he may have gotten an inning or two, or Connelly, one of those two. And the weather came and it just blew that game away. And then he's down for 5 days, you know, because the mounds aren't always in the best of shape. They're slick. The weather is really, you know, really cold gripping the baseball and pitching in that environment. I have no problem with their young guys, unless the team was World Series contender type of team and they had proven guys. Sandy Alcantara does not need to be rushed. There's really no reason. And again, it could be May, it could be June, but, you know, these guys, if he also takes off and looks like he's really got everything figured out, you know, opening day is possible, but that's on the player. You know, that's on the player. You know, Jose Fernandez is age 20. He showed that maturity, that skill, but he was a generational talent. And, you know, can't really expect everybody 22 or younger just to be ready on opening day.
All right, so a lot for this team to sort out between now and spring training to get ready for opening day. And a lot of upside for this team, things for this Marlins fan base to look forward to. That's going to do it for us for MLB.com Extras, our Marlins edition. We've got a fresh new edition next week, so make sure you stay tuned. Thanks, Joe. Appreciate you joining us. Hey, everyone. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Datt. Today we are talking Braves baseball, and we bring in our Braves reporter for MLB.com, Mark Bowman, who was down in snowy Atlanta today. Mark, Braves relievers Rodis Vizcaíno and Dan Winkler avoided an arbitration hearing, which is good, but it appears that Mike Foltynewicz will have his 2018 salary determined by that ARB panel. What's the latest here?
Well, that is exactly the case. They had went into the final day last week with three unsigned ARB guys and were able to get those deals with Winkler and Viz done, but the thing about Foltynewicz, the fans are going to look and say, how can you not reach an agreement when you're only $100,000 apart? When they stopped talking on Friday, they weren't $100,000 apart. You've got the player asking for a certain figure, the team offering a certain figure, and it kind of baffles me as well as to why the team and the players don't give a better sense of exactly what they're going to turn into the league, their arbitration figures, because you don't really want to go through a hearing. Nobody ever wants to go through a hearing. But let's get back to what I was saying. When they stopped talking, I don't think that the team knew that Mike was going to file at 2.3 at the same time. Mike and his agents didn't know the team was going to file at 2.2. Now you got to go through this process. The player never wants to hear, the team point out why they don't want to pay him a certain figure, and the team doesn't necessarily want to do that with another player. But at the same time, as a file and trial team, the Braves have to stick with their policy. You don't want to show weakness for the future, and so that they are going to have to go through with this hearing. At the end of the day, just the arbitration process is going to cost a decent portion of the $100,000 that separates the two parties. So it's an unfortunate development, but at the same time, I think one thing it has to be remembered is, the Braves have to go through with this because in the future, they want to make sure that other players and agents realize that they're sticking with their file and trial policy. If they don't reach an agreement by the time the figures are exchanged, their plan is to go to a hearing.
Yeah, it's unfortunate because I know I've talked to a lot of GMs, and it's never a good thing for players to have to sit there and hear, the worst of what they've done in the past for why they shouldn't be paid the amount that they believe that they are owed. So hopefully that gets cleared up here in the next couple of weeks. Let's talk about some positive news for the Braves. They land three players on the top 10 lefty prospects list. It's a lot for this Braves fan base to look forward to, huh?
No doubt. The story I wrote for today, when the listing came out, with Luis Cajara at number 4 and Colby Allard at 7 and Max Fried at number 10, I pointed out, just 2 years ago, you went through throughout the 2015 and 16 season, they had a total of 34 starts by left-handed pitchers. 20 of those were made by Alex Wood, who was traded in July of 2015 or near the end of July 2015. So, let's put it this way, that trend will not continue over the next few years. And we saw it end last summer because Sean Newcomb, he made 19 starts last year. He's probably going to be in the rotation. Gohara came up there in September. Max Fried got 4 starts in September. So, if we're looking ahead, at the rotation, Gohara and Newcomb, I'm guessing are going to be there at the start of the season. You start looking at where Allard may go. Last year, he skipped the Class A advanced level, pitched very well there at Mississippi, and I expect him to start the season with at Triple A Gwinnett. He's just a step away. He could arrive at some point, at some point this summer. Alex has even talked about the possibility of, I'm not saying this is definitely Colby, but you look at the surplus of young arms. There's some guys that will be put in the bullpen at some point this year. Max Fried did that last year. And that's kind of how he got his first taste of – that is how he got his first taste of the big leagues. Pitched as a reliever throughout August and made a few relief appearances and blended in with a few starts in September. And, Fried is a very interesting prospect. He's a little bit older than the other guys. But his his path was delayed by Tommy John. I don't think he has the ceiling of Gohara, who, you know, has been likened to CC Sabathia, not only just because they share basically the same frame, but, you know, their same approach. With Gohara, you have a guy who his average fastball last year, you know, is a small sample size, relatively small sample size, but average fastball, 95.6 miles per hour. That's one of the best in the league last year per the Statcast numbers. So as you look at Freed, he still has that big curveball. You know, I think he is more of a, you know, number three or a back end starter. I think that if you're going to choose two of those three that are definitely going to be at the big league level and possibly be a frontline starter, you're looking at Allard or Gohara. And they're two guys that, like I said, Gohara will be in the rotation start of the year. Allard could get there at some point this summer. And moving forward, I think that's the one thing Braves fans should be excited about is, you know, they saw the Aaron Blairs and the Matt Whistlers and kept saying, okay, is this what the rebuild's going to be? Is this the pitching prospects you're going to show us? You know, Sean Newcomb has probably he's going to have to make some strides this year to silence some of his critics. But you know, guys like, you know, Gohara, Allard, Mike Soroka, I think that they're going to provide a glimpse of exactly what this rebuild could bring in terms of pitching talent, top pitching talent.
All right, so a lot of those guys will have bigger impacts during the season, obviously, but as the franchise progresses and as they progress. Let's talk about some of these guys who will definitively be in the rotation, specifically the top of this rotation as the season starts. You got Julio Teheran, Mike Buntanevich, and Brandon McCarthy. What can we expect out of these three?
Well, I mean, that's the one thing that this rotation lacks is a legitimate frontline starter. You know, Julio, I think I mentioned it last week that Andrew Simon, I love him, everything about Andrew Simon. He's one of our best evaluators of talent. You know, he comes up with some of the best numbers, and he came up with something a couple weeks ago that showed that Julio has been one of the most consistent pitchers in the game over the last, I think it was four seasons. And I get why the numbers led him that way, but that, you know, I think the one thing, if you watch Julio every day, it's the inconsistency that bothers you. You know, I think his ceiling is a number three. If he can pitch at a number three like he, you know, like a number three like he has in the past, that's fine. Last year, you know, he was more of a back end starter, and just because of the inconsistencies, you like his determination, his ability to turn things around the last couple of seasons. But, you know, I think what you're going to see is some of these young pitchers are what the Braves would like to see. Some of these young pitchers start passing him in terms of, you know, within the rotation. And I think moving forward, you know, I don't think that they will trade Julio before the season, but at some point during this year, there's a point in time where you might move him. As for, you know, Buntanevich is going to be probably, you know, sit there in that number two role. The big thing is he's made 64, 65 career starts. You know, he's really only had one full season at the big league level. It's too early to say whether he's a starter or a closer, especially with the, you know, where the Braves are right now. They have the luxury to give him another year to start. We've seen him really good. We've seen him, you know, endure some pretty rough stretches like he did throughout most of August last year. I think that his progress this year, you know, not only will significantly influence, you know, what the Braves do over the few years that follow, but it will give us an idea of where Buntanevich's career will go the rest of the way. You know, can you use him as a, you know, as a starter? Is that his best role, or do you move him to the bullpen and become maybe a potential closer? You know, I pointed out in the story earlier this week that Wade Davis was 64 starts into his career when the Rays made the decision to move him to the pen. That was a point in time. I remember the Braves were talking about trading for him in 2011. They were already talking about moving him to the pen. It's an easy decision for some guys. You know, that's that's the easy way out. Let's put it that way. You know he can be successful as in the bullpen. You don't know what he can do as a starter. And I think that's the big thing for Mike Fultz-Nevis this year. He has to prove that he has the not only the physical ability, because he has four above average pitches. He has to prove he has not only the temperament, I think, is necessary to consistently get into that sixth inning and continue to work deep into games. With McCarthy, you know, he's a guy they got to bring in, provides the rotation, a veteran presence that didn't have. Health is a concern last year, but he was healthy enough to be placed on a Dodgers World Series roster. And if he can give the Braves 140 to 150 innings this year, allow them to bridge the gap to the future, protect some of their young arms, the workload, I think he will give them the team exactly what they are seeking.
Mark, what do you think is the one thing that could change about this rotation before opening day?
Well, I mean, the one thing that could change is if they would, somebody came calling for Julio with a deal that they couldn't pass up. I think that's something that they could do. We know that at some point within the next year, they'll be looking for a frontline starter. You don't necessarily want to do that via free agency, just because of the cost, especially when you have that depth. But I think moving forward, this is a team that will be looking to, make a move. They have the talent, the young pitchers or the prospect pieces in place that if a controllable frontline starter comes available, they can make a move for him. I don't know if that'll necessarily happen before the start of this season. It could happen at the trade deadline and definitely before the start of next year. But, let's at least remember that is a possibility. If Alex wants to pull the trigger now, he can do that. And there is definitely a need at some point within the next year.
Sure. They do have a little bit of time to be able to play with before, like you mentioned, constructing a playoff caliber roster. So that does bode well for them. I think plays in their favor to be able to test some of these guys out. Like you mentioned, Fultz-Nevis, see if he belongs in that starting rotation or a move to the pen makes the most sense for him. All right, Mark, that's going to do it for us here on MLB.com Extras Braves Edition. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, so make sure to stay tuned. Thanks, Mark. Appreciate you joining us. Hey, everyone. Welcome to MLB.com Extras. I'm Alexa Datt. Today, we are talking Phillies baseball, and we bring in our Phillies reporter for MLB.com, Todd Zielecki. Todd, we were just talking a little bit about Sixto Sanchez, the 19-year-old phenom is what I'm calling him. You can totally correct me on that if you want. But number 10 on MLB Pipeline's updated right-handed pitchers list. This is pretty exciting. Phillies fans should be pretty excited about him, yeah?
Yeah, absolutely. He is definitely one of the most hyped pitching prospects the Phillies have had in their system in a long time. And, there's a lot of reasons for that. One is he throws in the high 90s, and a lot of pitchers these days, it seems like, throws in the high 90s. He hits 100 every once in a while, but he can actually throw the pitch for strikes, and he's only 19 years old. So, you combine the fastball velocity, the fact that he can actually throw it for strikes, and his age. And when you've talked to scouts throughout the season, they love this guy. And it's not just Philly scouts or Philly's front office people. It's scouts across baseball absolutely love this guy. So, he's probably going to open the season in Clearwater, Class A Clearwater. He was the youngest starting pitcher in Clearwater when he got promoted late last season. He struggled a little bit, but this guy's got a ton of talent. And, if he pitches really well in 2018, you never know. You never know. I mean, maybe he's in the rotation as early as next season. But I think back to some of the big-time pitching prospects the Phillies have had over the past few years, and he certainly is getting that hype maybe I haven't seen or heard since, maybe Cole Hamels, in 2004, 2005, 2006.
I just love this guy's name. Sixto seems so cool to me. Yeah, Sixto Sanchez. So it's fun to say, and I know he's going to be a fun player to watch. Let's take a look at who's in the rotation right now, a group that's going to be led by Aaron Nola and Vince Velasquez. How do you believe this rotation will look opening day?
The X factor still is, are they going to go out and sign a starting pitcher or acquire a starting pitcher in a trade? Now, say that they don't go out and find somebody. Certainly Nola is a lock. I think Jared Eichhoff is, if he's not a lock, he's really, really close to a lock. And in fact, if he's healthy, I would be absolutely floored if he's not in the rotation. Same thing with Vince Velasquez, although he has struggled. I think the Phillies want to give him another shot in the rotation. Nick Pivetta, he made about 20-some starts last season, and he struggled. You know, you look at his ERA numbers, but every single time we've talked to Phillies GM Matt Klentak this offseason and talked about the rotation, he's really high on Pivetta, and understandably so. Pivetta has really good stuff. He showed some improvement late in the season, and they just think it's going to come together for him at some point. So I think those four guys are pretty safe bets if everybody is healthy. Then that fifth spot comes down to, I think, Ben Lively is probably the leading candidate. You have Mark Leiter Jr. in there. You have Zach Eflin in there, Jake Thompson, Tom Eshelman, who was their minor league pitcher of the year last year. You know, so you should actually have some pretty good competition with some young pitchers in spring training. It'll be interesting. The rotation absolutely is the biggest question mark with this team right now. But I think they're kind of hoping that some of these young guys will finally start to put it together and maybe surprise some people.
If they don't go out and sign somebody via free agency or possibly a trade, I mean, you mentioned in your article the age of some of these guys. Nola is going to be 24 on opening day. Vince Velasquez is 25. Pivetta is 25. Lively's 26. Where's the veteran leadership for this rotation?
Yeah, they really don't have that. And that was a thing that, you know, Jeremy Hellickson provided the past couple of seasons. Even Clay Buchholz last year, he only made two starts, but he hung around and kind of helped these guys out at home. So they do not have that. But I will say this, Nola and Eichhoff particularly are two very mature young guys. So while they don't have the experience, I think they kind of have that work ethic and kind of that respect from their peers, that they can kind of be the unofficial maybe leaders of that rotation. But that said, that's why I think a veteran starting pitcher would be helpful, not just from the leadership standpoint, but just from more of a certainty standpoint of, we actually know this guy can go out and throw 180, 200 innings and make 30-plus starts. I definitely think that that's something that they need and they should continue to pursue, even as camp is opening in less than a month.
You mentioned Mark Leiter Jr., and we obviously know his lineage, watching Al Leiter on TV all the time. What are the chances that he actually makes an impact with this team?
I think there's a decent shot. You know, where Leiter was valuable last year is he's a really effective swing guy. You know, he can start, he can pitch out of the bullpen, he can give you multiple innings. And, he showed some promise last year, and I got the chance to talk to him this week at the ballpark. And he thinks not only with himself, but a lot of these other pitchers that were with the team last year. A lot of them was their first big league experience. So, you know, guys are nervous. They're not really that comfortable. So he thinks coming into camp this year, you know, guys are going to be more comfortable. They're going to be more confident. They're going to kind of know what to expect. So, you know, they're not going to be as wide-eyed and as nervous. So I think a guy like Leiter, you know, he's certainly hoping to take the step forward. I think he's maybe on the outside looking in as far as a job, just because of some of the bullpen arms they've brought in. But certainly I think he's going to contribute in some way, shape, or form in 2018.
I was going to ask you the biggest question mark of this rotation, but like you mentioned, unfortunately, the entire rotation is really a question mark right now. What's their biggest strength, though, would you say?
Yeah, you know, that's really tough to say, to be honest with you. In terms of the rotation, I think their biggest strength is Nola. You know, he's probably the safest bet. You know, he was pitching like an all-star at one point last season. I think he's really primed to take a step forward in 2018. He might not be a quote unquote ace, a true number one like a Scherzer or a Kershaw or a Zach Greinke, but he can be pretty close. I mean, he could be a very solid number two, 1A type of guy. But I think the other, if you know, more abstractly, I guess you could say their biggest strength is the fact that they're all young, like you mentioned earlier. And there's a lot of history to suggest when you look at some starting pitchers that sometimes it takes a while for guys. You look at Jake Arrieta, you look at Max Scherzer, you look at the early in the careers of Tom Glavine and John Smoltz, Greg Maddux. Not comparing this current group to those guys, Hall of Famers and future Hall of Famers, but the point being that sometimes it takes these starting pitchers a while to develop, and maybe something is going to finally click with Nick Pivetta. Maybe something is going to click with Velasquez or Jared Eichhoff, and if they can get just enough, one or two of those guys more to click, I think that it's going to bode really well for this team in the future.
So we had talked earlier on podcasts previously about potentially Alex Cobb, fitting in with this rotation. Let's say they do go out and sign, a veteran presence or a guy who could be able to bolster this starting rotation. Where do you think they end up finishing in the division? Do you think it's just one arm that helps, catapult them closer to the top of the division, or they need a lot more help in order to compete with the Nationals and the Mets?
Well, say they get Alex Cobb or Lance Lynn or they get somebody in a trade. I really think that if things break right, they could kind of be on the outside looking in terms of that second NL wild card. I don't think they have enough there yet, enough experience yet to take a run at the Nationals for the NL East title. I think it's the Nationals' title to lose. I think something really crazy would have to happen for the Nationals not to win the division. But I do think that based off the way the offense played in the second half of last season, based on just on paper how the bullpen looks in terms of overall talent, that if they can get a veteran starter in there, Nola does what he does, Eichhoff bounces back from his injury, and like I said, just one other guy at that point kind of flips that switch, they should be in a lot of games. So I can actually see them being a 500 or better team in that scenario. And again, if you're better than 500 with the second wild card, with two wild card teams these days, that can kind of put you in the race going into September. And I think if that happens, the Phillies would consider 2018 a huge success.
Yeah, absolutely, and could potentially make some deals at the deadline if they are, in the thick of it. And the NL wild card, like you mentioned, there are so many teams that, well, one, have gotten better, but two, have decided to fall back a little bit this year. So it's kind of wide open. There's going to be a lot of competition. So it'll be interesting to see where the Phillies fall. You wrote a little bit about Rhys Hoskins also this week. 18 home runs in 50 games, and he's embracing his newfound celebrity with a smile. What does that exactly mean?
He's just, I've seen some guys maybe get a little bit uncomfortable, maybe get a little standoffish, just kind of be worn out, kind of that feeling of like, I got to go to another banquet or everybody's kind of bothering me. But he's really had a great attitude about it. And the thing he said the other day is I'm just trying to enjoy it and acknowledge that it's fun, And he said something I thought was pretty cool. He said, listen, I might there's a chance that something could happen to me tomorrow and I might never be able to play baseball again. So I'm just going to enjoy it as long as it lasts. And I think that's a really healthy way to look at it. Don't look at it as a burden. I mean, I'm sure it's going to become overwhelming, if he continues to hit like he hit last year. I mean, he's going to become a big, big star in Philadelphia. And, he's not going to be able to walk down the street without getting, multiple people coming up and asking for a selfie or an autograph or a quick hello or a handshake. But if he has the attitude of, hey, this actually isn't a bad thing. This means I'm doing well and the team is doing well and people are enjoying Phillies baseball again. I think that's a good way to approach it. And so far he's been able to do that. So that's encouraging because the Phillies look at him as a face of the organization. And they also look at him as a leader on this team. So if you have a leader on the team kind of handling that in a positive way, maybe that'll kind of trickle down to some of the other players as they start to experience that success and that kind of recognition in town as well.
Yeah, let's hope that success continues for him, because being the face of the franchise comes with a lot of the ups and downs throughout the season. So let's hope it's all positive for Rhys Hoskins. That's going to do it for us here on MLB.com Extras, our Phillies edition. We'll be back next week with a brand new episode, so stay tuned. Thanks so much, Todd. Appreciate it.